Hi, and welcome to Lakeshore Update. I'm Dee Dodson. On this edition of the podcast, you'll hear the latest on an endorsement Senator Joe Donnelly received. A former East Chicago councilman was sentenced to 20 years in prison. Jill Sheridan reports on the stigma associated with CBD oil usage for seniors. And Chris Nolte has a conversation with City of Hammond Mayor Thomas McDermott. All of that and more on this edition of Lakeshore Update. Indiana's House Speaker says a top-ranking Republican lawmaker is in critical condition following a motorcycle accident in Michigan. Speaker Brian Bossman said in a statement Thursday that House Ways and Means Chairman Tim Brown is in critical but stable condition and that, quote, the next few days are going to be very important for the lawmaker. Brown was transported to a hospital in Ann Arbor after he was thrown from his motorcycle Wednesday when an SUV pulled in front of him near Northern Michigan's Mackinac Bridge. Brown was on a trip with fellow Republican Representative Mike Speedy of Indianapolis, who wasn't injured. Brown, a retired emergency room physician, has served in the legislature since 1994. You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson. A former Northwest Indiana City Councilman has been sentenced to 20 years in prison for fatally shooting a man he owed a drug debt to. U.S. District Court Judge Philip Simon sentenced Robert Battle Tuesday on the former East Chicago Councilman's guilty plea of discharging a firearm and causing death in relation to a drug trafficking crime. The sentence will be followed by 2 years of supervised release. Prosecutors say Battle shot 31-year-old Raimundo Carrillo Jr. in the back on October 12, 2015 outside Battle's home. Prosecutors have said that Battle was selling cocaine in East Chicago and shot the man, quote, over a drug debt he owed Camarillo. Battle was elected to his second term that November while indicted on drug and murder charges.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson.
An Indiana sheriff says it does not appear any laws were broken when two men took a video of themselves playing with the limp body of another man who died of an apparent drug overdose and posted it on social media. Porter County Coroner Chuck Harris said the video, which included manipulating the man's mouth like he was singing a song and lifting his arms like he was a puppet, showed, quote, a blatant disrespect for human life. But Porter County Sheriff Dave Reynolds said Monday that his office concluded no laws were broken and that the men told him they were, quote, horseplaying. The Times reports Harris said that the man in the video was 21-year-old Kyle Kirby, who was pronounced dead Sunday in Valparaiso. Harris suspects the death was a drug overdose, but won't know until a toxicology report comes in 2 weeks. Harris said he couldn't determine whether Kirby was alive when he was filmed slumped over as one man tied cords to his wrist. Another man in the video slaps the apparently unconscious man, shakes his head, and pumps his chest in a CPR-like motion before manipulating his mouth and singing a song. The video was provided to the newspaper by Heather Anderson, who was Facebook friends with the man she said posted it Sunday morning with the caption, quote, one of my close friends passed away this morning. Please stop doing drugs. Hashtag fentanyl. Anderson said she commented on the video asking if Kirby was okay and that she should alert authorities. The man who posted the video messaged back asking her to not alert authorities, alleging Kirby was home and alive. The man asserted the video was supposed to be a wake-up call to his friend about his drug use. Sheriff Reynolds said his office responded to a call at Kirby's South Haven residence later that afternoon after a parent found him in a bed covered in vomit and not breathing. Paramedics administered an opioid overdose reversal drug but didn't know what he used other than alcohol. Kirby eventually died at a hospital. A family member said she suspects Kirby was given fentanyl-laced Xanax and that the men in the video should have called for emergency help. She said the video was degrading and that Kirby was a funny, outgoing man.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson.
Indiana's largest law enforcement officers organization endorsed Senator Joe Donnelly Monday in the pivotal U.S. Senate race. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports the Indiana Fraternal Order of Police calls Donnelly one of its strongest advocates in Congress.
The kids hungry. The kids.
Thank you.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Indiana School Superintendent Jennifer McCormick says the best way for the federal government to improve school safety is through support, guidance, and resources. McCormick and U.S. Senator Joe Donnelly discussed those issues Monday at a school safety conference in Indianapolis. McCormick praised Donnelly for his willingness to deliver federal help for Indiana schools, and she notes his recognition that the best support is flexible.
Anytime we have any guidance that, you know, you can pick and choose kind of that option of what fits the state, what would work given your circumstances, all of that is helpful.
One option discussed at the federal level would arm teachers in schools. Donnelly says that decision is best left to local leaders.
I certainly have significant questions about that, but each area I think is going to be making a lot of their own decisions.
Local school boards in Indiana can already allow personnel to carry firearms.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Indiana officials say the vast majority of unwanted telephone calls reported by Hoosiers are scams. And Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports, officials say that's the problem with the state's Do Not Call list. It wasn't designed to prevent scams.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
An Indiana teenager is the first in the state to receive a new type of cancer treatment for leukemia. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jill Sheridan reports the CAR T-cell therapy was just approved by the FDA last year.
CAR T is a type of immunotherapy where a patient's T cells are taken from their body and re-engineered to fight their cancer. The therapy has been approved for use against leukemia and lymphoma. 18-year-old Kylie Sweet relapsed from acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or ALL, three times. IU Riley Hospital's Dr. Jody Skiles says, in trials, the new treatment is effective in more than 80% of pediatric cases.
Which is unheard of when you're talking about dealing with patients with multiply relapsed disease or even refractory disease that didn't respond to standard chemotherapy up front.
CAR T-cell therapy has fewer side effects and less long-term toxicity. Kylie's T cells have been sent to a drug company that will re-engineer them. The cells will be transferred back to her body in the coming weeks. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Jill Sheridan.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
The state has released this year's ISTEP scores to schools and corporations after running into two separate grading issues late last month. The results were initially scheduled to be made public last week. The State Department of Education sent out a statement Monday saying a fix for a 10th grade math question increased nearly 28,000 student scores. A second issue dealing with data collection on some paper exams affected 115 students across grade levels. Schools and corporations will review the data before scores are presented to the state board later this fall.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
the Indiana Supreme Court could overturn a state law that bars cities from charging more than $5 in annual fees to landlords for their rental properties. Those fees typically get passed on to renters themselves. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports Thursday's court hearing focused on exceptions to the law.
The legislature in 2014 said cities couldn't charge landlords a rental inspection fee of more than $5 per property, but three cities were exempt: Bloomington, West Lafayette, and Hammond. It appears lawmakers didn't mean to include Hammond. They took away the Northwest Indiana city's exemption a year later. Attorney for Hammond, Brian Babb, says the state still gives the other two preferential treatment, and the state constitution bars so-called special legislation.
Don't give the legislators a license to carve out special treatment with respect to fees statewide.
Attorney Stephen Shockley represents Hammond rental property owners. He says Bloomington and West Lafayette have unique housing markets, which makes the special legislation okay.
Because of the percentage of rental housing in Bloomington, West Lafayette, far higher than any place else in the state.
There's no timetable for the court's decision. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith at the State House.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
U.S. Education Assistant Secretary Frank Brogan visited Purdue University's Charter High School in Indianapolis Wednesday as part of the department's back-to-school tour. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Eric Weddle reports that the national tour's theme is rethinking education.
Assistant Education Secretary Frank Brogan was not shy about his feelings for Purdue Polytechnic High School, the Big Ten University's first charter school.
This is an extraordinary example of rethinking education, which is a big part of this tour.
During the brief visit, he praised its out-of-the-box ideas, like foregoing a master schedule. Instead, students create their own schedule with classes, internships, and science and engineering-based group projects. Brogan says the U.S. Education Department's tour aims to put a spotlight on schools with innovative ideas. But he says changes are needed at the federal level so school leaders can request grant funding for these unique curriculum.
That might go to help better their opportunity to rethink and then recreate education in their schools or their districts.
Brogan also toured a school in Shelbyville Wednesday. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Eric Weddle.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Six Indiana communities will be selected to host a Smithsonian Institution exhibit on rural America beginning 2019. Indiana Humanities announced Tuesday it will sponsor a tour of the exhibit called Crossroads, Change Comes to Rural America. The six communities chosen will host the exhibit for 6 weeks each. The communities will receive training, funding, and other resources from the Smithsonian, Indiana Humanities, and the Indiana Office of Community and Rural Affairs. Each of the six hosts will also curate a section of the exhibit on their own community. Up to 10 additional communities will receive grants to develop programs, mini exhibits, and other projects related to the exhibit. Host organizations such as libraries, museums, and local governments should be located in communities of 15,000 or fewer people. The tour dates begin September 2019 and conclude in the final city June 21st, 2020. Applications are now open. Visit www.indianahumanities.org for details.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
High school students are now earning money for getting good grades or visiting a college campus. The national organization Raise Me launched the ideal of microscholarships 5 years ago. As Indiana Public Broadcasting's Lindsay Wright reports, with the increasing cost of higher education, Raise Me officials tout microscholarships as a way to help students pay for school.
Christopher Pack is an artist, and it shows when you step into his room. His wall is lined with a mix of black and white portraits and colorful action scenes.
You know, I started practicing and really started honing my skills with drawing.
One of his favorite things to bring to life on paper, superheroes.
This is Deadpool. Everyone should know him by now. You know, they made movies about him.
And if you don't know, he's a foul-mouthed anti-hero, a Marvel character. It makes sense that Pak plans to study visual and sports communications in college. He recently graduated as valedictorian from a small charter school in Indianapolis, and he says college wouldn't have been possible without micro-scholarships.
With Raise Me, I was able to see all the achievements I went through, and I was saying, you know what, let me just put them in and see what I get.
Pak created a profile on RaiseMe and started following institutions that offer micro-scholarships. From there, he added in his achievements from freshman to senior year and got an estimate from each school of how much money they would offer him. Students can receive money for good grades, volunteering, and participating in sports. They can range from, say, $75 to up to $6,000. More than a million high schoolers across the country are using the free platform. RaiseMe Director of Partnerships Miles Hodge says that includes about 25,000 in Indiana.
It really is changing the dynamic, and it's having students start to think about it earlier and also exposing them to schools they might not have ever thought of before.
Pak committed to IUPUI. The school just partnered with RaiseMe last year. Beth Knight is the director of IUPUI's scholarship office. She says the university liked the idea of offering the small scholarships.
You're basically encouraging the student to do things that they need to do to really become college prepared anyway, but you're giving them sort of an allowance in these micro scholarships along the way, and it makes them feel actively engaged.
Indiana State University started offering micro-scholarships a couple years ago. Associate Vice President for Enrollment Management Richard Toomey says higher education institutions used to focus their recruitment efforts on juniors and seniors, but he says micro-scholarships allow them to do meaningful outreach earlier.
If a student comes and takes a college tour and actually registered through our admissions office and experiences campus for a day with us, we will actually award them a one-time $500 scholarship to actually enroll at Indiana State.
Although funds received through micro-scholarships won't necessarily pay for a student's entire tuition, experts say it can be a good recruitment strategy. But Lumina Foundation Strategy Director Haley Glover says universities can't stop there.
Being able to support students once they get to college is equally, if not more important than getting students to the door of the college.
Since the platform is so new, there's not much data to measure its impact. But Hodge says some schools are seeing higher GPAs and more students staying enrolled on average. And maybe most importantly, it encourages high schoolers to start thinking about their finances earlier.
The value of education has never really been focused on more than it is now. Obviously, there's a lot of talk about student debt. And so really finding the types of aid that can help students pay for college and college affordability is really important.
That's why it was so important for Pak to find multiple ways to pay for school. He knew his parents couldn't, so after receiving more than $7,000 in micro-scholarships, he applied for more scholarships.
And I just found what's out there, and RaiseMe just kind of was that push to say, hey, there's more out there. You just got to look for them and just apply.
Pak started at IUPUI this semester, and his tuition costs are completely covered. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Lindsay Wright.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Indiana legalized the use of CBD or cannabidiol this year. With improved access to the substance, more seniors are trying it to relieve pain and to treat chronic illness. But Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jill Sheridan reports, recipients and healthcare providers say it is still hard for the hemp extract to shake off the stigma.
Cannabidiol, or CBD, was something Carol Rechtard heard about and thought maybe it could help her husband, but it wasn't legal.
So, I just kept watching and waiting and studying.
Her husband, Jim Rechtard, is 74 years old. He has diabetes, and Carol's read emerging evidence that shows CBD can treat the chronic disease. When Indiana legalized its use, Carol got it for Jim and told his doctor.
He said, let's do an A1C. So they took his blood work, and it came back perfect.
Jim also suffers from chronic pain related to bursitis, and Carol says,
at this point, his pain has gone from a 10 down to a 5.
And it doesn't only help Jim.
It helps me because I see somebody that has hope now.
Indiana was one of the last states to legalize CBD, an extract from the hemp plant. Carol and Jim purchase it at Davidson Greenhouse in Crawfordsville.
from 10 milligrams each all the way up.
Owner Mark Davidson is a self-described plantsman.
I said, if this ever becomes legal in Indiana, I'm going to sell it out the front door of my store because I know this can help so many other people.
He says marijuana and hemp are different.
Just as every sisters that I know, they're very different sisters. And the hemp plant does not have very much THC, and it has a very high level of CBD.
CBD sold in Indiana has to be manufactured with less than 0.3% THC, the psychoactive ingredient in cannabis. But Carol says some seniors still stigmatize CBD.
You know, you tell some people, you know, I put Jim on CBD oil, they're like, oh, you know, he's going to get high, you know. No, he's not. This is for medicinal purposes.
Dr. Dan Stock is a family medicine practitioner in Noblesville. He prescribes CBD for some patients with neurological or immunological disorders. He explains how receptors in the endocannabinoid system work.
When that system becomes deranged, then the transmitting cell just keeps sending signals and yelling and yelling, and it tends to make the receiving cell become hyperactive. And so CBD can normalize that system without ever making it hyperactive.
Stock says it's effective for conditions related to aging.
If a lady comes into me with postmenopausal anxiety and depression because of hormone deficiency, then I'm going to recommend she use CBD as a thing she can try to get this under control.
It took Indiana lawmakers years to approve the use of CBD for medicinal purposes. Every year, numerous scientists testified the substance is safe, effective, it has no side effects, it's not addictive, and it doesn't get you high. Jeff Staker leads Hoosier Veterans for Medical Cannabis. At the VFW in Kokomo, Staker has stacks of books about cannabis and health benefits. The past few years, he watched the debate on CBD.
I think I was really frustrated because you hear the same story over and over again, and you think, what is up with these politicians not listening?
Staker says senior vets were difficult to convince, too. But now, they're even in support of measures to legalize medical marijuana.
Some of the senior officers, and they took me aside afterwards, and he said, you know what, 2 years ago, I would have never thought that I would have voted this way, but you've opened up our eyes, and you've educated us.
Lawmakers will study that issue next month. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Jill Sheridan.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Here's regionally speaking host Chris Nolte with a conversation with City of Hammond Mayor
Thomas
McDermott.
From time to time, we have a chance to chat with Hammond Mayor Tom McDermott Jr. about what's happening in the city, which, of course, is Lake County's largest city. And it's nice to have the mayor with us today. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for the invite, Chris. Nice talking to you.
Well, it's nice talking with you, too. Let's take a look at some of the things that have happened. Good things have happened in the City of Hammond lately. A lot of them are dealing with economic development. One in particular, in fact, it was, I guess, just this past weekend, where folks that maybe have driven by it's been called for a long time, the Sportsplex, now the Sports and Community Center, in the spot where Woodmark Shopping Center used to be. Have had a chance to check the building out here. Give us an idea of what people have thought so far and what's going to happen now that the building is nearly completed, officially completed at least.
Well, we're having a ribbon cutting next week on it. It was about a week ago. We had over 600 people show up for, it was a community sneak peek at the complex. It's not completely done yet, but we want people to see what we're talking about. You know, it's hard to appreciate how big it is until you get in there and see what's going on. But there's two different sides to it. On the soccer side, we have two indoor soccer fields built side by side with bleachers. And, you know, we have planned to have a lot of leagues offered, you know, leagues for adults, leagues for kids, obviously, travel tournaments, stuff like that. On the basketball volleyball side, we have six indoor, full-size indoor basketball courts that can be easily converted over to 12 indoor volleyball courts. And on that side, we also plan to run leagues, but what we really see on that side is massive weekend tournaments, you know, tournaments that start on Friday, they go Saturday, and then on Sunday they have the elimination brackets, you know, big time, you know, travel volleyball, big, you know, travel basketball tournaments. And quite frankly, we've already sold out the entire winter. The complex every weekend is sold out.
Wow.
Before it even ribbon cut through June. So, including some very big name tournaments that we can't talk about at this point. But I mean, our first year is sold out already. I imagine this is going to be a driver for that part of our city, which is the Woodmark section of Hammond. I think that we're going to see the kind of impact that the Woodmont Mall used to have, because this is going to bring a lot of people into Hammond. And I'm very proud of it. And we actually had a lot of people that wanted to buy the naming rights to it, and we intentionally left the word Hammond in there because we want people to know, you know, when they're setting their tournaments up, they're going to Hammond. I think that's important.
One of the things, too, I think that at some point, I'm sure people lament the demise of Woodmont Shopping Center because of what the shopping center in its glory years really, mm-hmm. really represented to the city of Hammond. And when I know that that businesses started leaving, going elsewhere, and buildings started being taken down, and it was all of a sudden suddenly left only to the Carson Peary Scott store. And then now, of course, it's closed. What are we going to find here? We know it's taken on the life of its own now with the new facility. What things might be in the works for the rest of what used to be the Woodmont Shopping Center?
Well, the Carson's is all that's left of the Woodmont Shopping Center. I imagine if I were a betting man, I would say within a year it'll be on the ground, and I hope within a year we have something going up in its place. Mm-hmm. But I'm not going to be impatient either, because this sports complex is opening officially in a couple, I think it's September 22nd, I want to say, or September 27th, like right around there. But once it opens up, I think people are going to see with their own eyes what kind of numbers this is generating, what kind of people it's bringing into our city. And entrepreneurs are going to start looking at the old Carson Peary Scott building and saying, I could do way better than an old retail store at that location, especially with the sportsplex right next door.
Oh, certainly.
I don't think it's a stretch to think that there could be a large hotel where the Carson Peary Scott stands. I don't think that's a stretch at all.
I know that there will be probably a big demand for parking with all these events that are going to be happening, not only sports events, but community events, since we mentioned at the outset of our conversation that it's really the Hammond Sports and Community Center. Mm-hmm. Although it's been called a sportsplex all along, I think, just for having a name to the project, you're going to have to look for some more parking space, and I know that it's going to be pretty tight for a while, I would imagine.
Well, that's where car seats shutting down doesn't really hurt us, and the thing is, there's parking all around this building. It's one of the things that land that was previously not being used, that was between basically just south of the Walmart, that land is being converted over to parking as well. And once Carson's comes down, there's going to be parking at that location as well. But yeah, we are very mindful of that. Okay. And there's a neighborhood right to the south, and we don't want to impact that neighborhood any more than, we already are.
Now, we talked here about the former Sportsplex, as we mentioned, now the Sports and Community Center. They're in the Woodmont neighborhood. Going a little further to the south, we have another major project that is coming, I wouldn't say to close, but certainly filling up fast, and that's the Oxbow Landing, which is just mm-hmm. south of 8094, right on the edge of Hammond and Highland. What's the latest, and what's in the works for that project?
Well, there's two pieces of property that we own that were purchased, and basically they converted those two large pieces of land into, it's going to be a commercial building that's a twin to the one that was already built. That the building that was built is already leased out. This second building is going to be leased out once it's built. It's a great location, and there's a lot of law firms and other large businesses that are taking advantage of the great location and the high visibility. So we expect to see that second commercial building looks very similar to the first one that's built, just to the south of the first building. And then around the commercial building, there's four outlots where we expect to see more retail, like restaurant type of establishments.
Mm-hmm. Now, and then going to the north, north of the Woodmont neighborhood, of course, we have more development underway. We have Lear Corporation is mm-hmm. putting in their new building. Bring us up to date on that project. And maybe also, too, I guess, what's going to happen to the current Lear building? They're not too far away from Woodmont.
Well, that's a great question. In fact, first off, Lear was previously located on 165th, just across the street from the Walmart, the old Woodmont Mall, that area.
Right.
They needed more space, and Hammond was lucky enough to be the winner of many communities that were seeking to have Lear build their new plant there. And what we got as a result was a $34 million plant. Lear has been a great corporate neighbor, and they've been great partners with us, and we're super excited to have, basically all the employees that were located in Portage and in Hammond, Indiana, consolidated under one roof. So I think it's like 800 jobs that are going to be created there.
Wow.
So we're real excited. But once they leave, they're going to leave their old, building on 165th, and I'm almost certain there's a buyer that's real close to closing the deal if they haven't closed already. And I don't want to get ahead of myself.
No, but I
heard the name, but I can't reveal it publicly, but not worried.
No, you can't help but feel that somebody is interested in that property. There are so many other industrial properties along there. You've got Jupiter Steel, you've got Lear, you've got all the other businesses that are there along that particular stretch.
And Chris, this one's an Illinois company moving from Chicago into Hammond, which has been a common theme, you know, because of the problems that they're having in Illinois and the great situation we face here in Indiana with the low taxes. I mean, we are seeing a lot of companies from Chicago move into our city.
Yeah, I hear.
I'm happy about that.
Another question I had to ask about is, in fact, it kind of goes along in relationship to just that. That we've been hearing even commercials on radio stations, people concerned about the property taxes going up in Illinois and how much it's going to be. Of course, we already know that people have come from Illinois to live in Indiana, and now there are many cases coming to work in Indiana, too, if they happen to be coming over. But do you see the city of Hammond picking up more business and related development, residential maybe, or other commercial development because of what's happening across the state line?
We do see that. A lot of our, you know, and a lot of our home sales are to people come from the state of Illinois moving into our city. It's going to be interesting to see our next census because I've personally, you know, we've a lot of people that used to live in some, you know, like River Park apartments. So we have done things to change our population, but I'd be shocked if Hammond wasn't 79,000 or greater. So I'm not worried about losing population. And as far as our businesses are concerned, it's been nothing but positive also. And that's a tip of the cap to Indianapolis for keeping us in a good financial situation, you know, in Indiana. And it's just natural for people from Illinois. They're either looking to move north to Wisconsin or south and east to Indiana. So.
Yeah. That's good news to hear, certainly for us here on this side of the state line. We're talking with Hammond Mayor Tom McDermott Jr. about some of the things happening in the city of Hammond lately. We've talked about some great development with the sports and community center about to officially open very soon. The Lear Corporation with their new facility that's coming up. It's going to bring more business and some other projects, of course, still staying in Hammond because it's so close to where their major source of their output is, but combining the Portage and the Hammond operations together. Are there any other projects in any other neighborhoods in Hammond that we should be aware of?
Well, you know, the data center project is much acclaimed. It was a result of my economic development team putting together a proposal to try to lure Amazon's HQ2 to Hammond, Indiana. We knew that was an extreme long shot. It would be like hitting the lotto. But nonetheless, I forced my economic development department to put together a proposal and send it to Seattle. And we got a lot of attention from the press when we did that. And what happened was, as a result of the press attention, we linked up with a gentleman that grew up in the region but lives in Carmel, Indiana now. And he got together with a gentleman that he went to Andrean with, or he knew through Andrean connections, Matt Reardon, who knew the city of Hammond's administration, and he knew a lot about the state line generating plant. And through all of our connections, we ended up talking to a gentleman from New York named Peter Feldman, who is an expert at building data centers. And after looking at our location in Hammond, he figured that it was one of the best locations you could build one of these data centers in the country for a number of reasons. The low tax environment, going back to what we were talking about earlier, easy access to cooling water with Lake Michigan there, reliable electric service, it doesn't get more reliable than that location, and great access to the internet for the same reason the electrical is so great, the internet's right there also. It's literally the information superhighway passes right by that site. So for all those reasons, the former state line generating station is now it's going to be the venue for a $40 million data center, and there's a very good chance that $40 million could grow into 100 or 200 million within a few years because they expect this to be a huge development. And we hosted CEOs from across the country that did this type of work. 250 data center technicians and CEOs came to an event in Hammond, Indiana, just a few weeks ago, and there's a lot of excitement about this location.
I imagine probably the only competition, if you want to call it that, for the new facility that's going to go in there along the lakefront is the one that's already kind of up because the building was already there. We're talking about over in Illinois, the data center that's in the former Sun-Times printing plant, which is there on the south side of town.
Isn't it in Fermac? I want to say it's on.
I think so. Yeah, it's taken over and starting to. I get to getting operation there too. So we know that there's a little competition there, but there's always room for more, I suppose, especially in this area. Yeah.
But think about the data center at Cermak. The real estate costs are way higher. The taxes are way higher. The cooling water they need to cool down the data center is way more expensive because Chicago water is expensive. You come over here to Hammond, cooling water is plentiful. You got the same electric service and all that, low tax environment and cheaper land. I mean, where would you rather put it?
Well, there you have it. Yeah, we've kind of answered the questions there, haven't we? Yeah. Sure.
I keep on complimenting the state of Indiana. People are going to think I'm being too nice to the governor.
One other thing I'd like to bring up, if we can, Mayor, here we've talked here about business industry, about economic development in particular. One other thing we mentioned, haven't mentioned lately, is entertainment. We know a lot of people enjoy coming to Wolf Lake, to the complex there, because of the Festival of the Lakes every year. And I understand there's even, it's going out to even to entertainment coming up, I guess, even this weekend, I understand.
Oh, yeah, we have entertainment a lot. A lot of the shows we do are free, but we do have two big shows coming up. I'm not sure if a lot of people in South County are aware that we have the Steve Miller Band playing at the Hammond location at the Pavilion at Wolf Lake on Saturday, September 22nd. I mean, Steve Miller Band, that's a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame band coming to Hammond, Indiana. So, and we are selling tickets for that event right now at wolflakepavilion.com. Ticket sales are going really well. This is a big event, and we're super excited about
hosting it in Hammond. So I hope we have a real big crowd to see the Steve Miller Band. And the night before that, we have a rock concert with a singer called Gucci Mane, who played at Lollapalooza this year. He's playing the night before, and ticket sales are going really well for that show. But that show is geared towards a younger audience. I think a lot of your listeners' kids will know who Gucci Mane is.
Yes, yes.
But we expect that to be a big show with a totally different crowd than Saturday. Saturday is geared more towards a typical region, adult audience, you know.
That's right. That's right. There must be something that obviously promoters of these events seem to like when you've got an act like Steve Miller Band coming in into Hammond, Indiana, of all places.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not talking about the facility at the casino. We're talking about about Wolf Lake. There must be something about the amphitheater and about the area that appeals to these people.
Tell you what, when the weather's nice out there, and sometimes the weather is not nice, but when the weather's nice out there, it's hard to beat that location. It's like you're playing on an ocean. But you know, we put it this way, during the Nas, we had a Nas concert, which is a big rap act, during last year's festival, and the president of Live Nation's Midwest Operations was out there watching us and watching the venue. There's 10,000 people there that day. I mean, it was packed. We had a big audience, you know, big act, and Live Nation's out there watching us. So we're doing something right, you know, and we're getting the attention of people that are, you know, paying attention, which is good. So I don't think it's a stretch 5 years from now that there's regular concerts going on at the Pavilion at Wolf Lake with big name acts, just like you see in Tinley Park, just like you see at the Ravinia. There's no reason to think that Hammond's Wolf Lake Pavilion can't be the same.
Well, Mayor McDermott, thanks for spending time to talk about what's happening in the city of Hammond these days, and hope to have you back again soon.
Thank you, Chris. Nice talking to you.
Nice talking with you.
Regionally Speaking with host Chris Nolte can be heard each Monday through Thursday at noon on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, and streaming online at lakeshorepublicradio.org, where you can also find podcasts of the show when you click on the program's link. For the latest in local news and information, tune in Monday at 6 a.m. for Morning Edition with local host Chris Nolte. Lakeshore Update is supported by the listeners and members of Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Podcasts for Lakeshore Update are posted each Friday on our website, lakeshorepublicradio.org, as well as on NPR One. Make sure you search for WLPR and select us as your home station. Music for Lakeshore Update was written and produced by BenSound.com. For Lakeshore Update, I'm Dee Dotson.